I certainly knew that I was going to die someday. But what I didn't know is how I would respond. Because I, like, all the things I thought I'd be worried about were not really on the list.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp Online Therapy. Visit betterhelp.com/Padilla because sometimes existing is exhausting. Hello, Hank Green.
Yeah.
It's hard to even describe what you are popular for because there are so many things.
I don't like to do one thing.
Yeah, a little bit
like
of everything.
I do lots of things.
Some people might know you from Vlogbrothers. Yeah. Some people might know you from your many amazing crash courses that helped them get through high school and college.
Yeah.
Some people might know you as a co-founder of VidCon.
Uh-huh.
Some people might know you from writing two books.
Yeah.
Some people might know you as the Bill Nye for the modern era, which I know that you deny.
I think there's a lot of Bill Nyes for the modern era. We can share the load.
Okay, sure.
A large load.
We love large loads.
I know, me too.
The biggest thing that I know you for is the guy that I smoked weed with 6 years ago.
What? When did I smoke weed with you?
You remember that?
What?
We were in Brooklyn for New York.
Yeah. It was like a YouTube thing.
YouTube thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a fun night. We just walked around. I was a weed newbie.
Yeah, you were new to weed.
Yeah, it was good. It was a good time. Good laughs, good conversations.
Yeah.
That was before COVID. That was before cancer.
Yeah, before TikTok.
Oh shit, it was.
Yeah.
But everything in your life has shifted since then.
Yeah, I mean, in a lot of, like, I don't know. Yeah. I feel like the same guy, but of course you do, right? The sort of opportunities that this job affords is really important to, like, take a chance and, like, remember, like, the cool things that you've gotten to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember walking out on, like, a rooftop deck in, I don't know if we were in Brooklyn, and, like, looking out over the New York City skyline and being like, this is wild that I'm here right now. And with all these cool people and, like, having these cool conversations and like, we're sort of trying to remake media from the ground up, and no one understands what it's going to be.
We don't understand what we're doing.
We don't know what we're doing. Yeah, I've always felt like I was in the room with legends when I'm hanging out with YouTubers.
It is interesting speaking with other people who have been on the platform for so long. Did you get started in 2006 or 2007?
I uploaded my first video January 1st, 2007.
Everything was completely different. There still aren't any rules, but there were definitely no rules then. It was like, make it up.
Well, yeah, like the idea that someone would spend time making a video.
Well, there was no money to be made then.
Yeah.
It was impossible to make money.
Yeah. So, like, why would you spend extra time making it? And then, like, if you people put a little bit of effort in it, it was like, what is this?
Yeah. I just love talking with people who have been around, like, it's weird to say trailblazing because it kind of means that I did the same thing too, but, like, trailblazing in so many different areas. And like you said, you're excited about doing so many things, so you can't just stick to one specific
thing. I am not good at sticking to one thing. And it's not a strategy.
Right.
I don't think it's better. Mm-hmm. It's just, like, I've just accepted that it's who I am.
Well, you're following what excites you, right?
Yeah.
You're following what you have passion for. And
yeah.
You're in LA right now doing stand-up.
Yeah.
Which seems so far.
I know, you even side. Saying it, I'm like, wow, like, yeah. Shut up. Like, it can't be a thing I'm doing.
I was there last night watching your show. It was a sold-out comedy club with 500 people there attending that. It was loud. Everyone was so excited. You are very, very, very funny. I know that you're like, I don't see myself as a stand-up comedian. I'm not
a
stand-up
comedian.
Well,
you have to say it on stage.
Have you felt it? Do you feel like you are a stand-up comedian now?
Look, I don't know. It's it's a really, like, it's a world that I love very much. Mm-hmm. And I do feel like I have appreciated it externally for a long time. Like, I have sent my show, like, just cell phone videos to a couple of stand-up comedians who I really respect. And they're like, this is stand-up. Like, you're good at this. And you like, it's wild how natural you seem on that stage. The other thing separating me is that it's really hard, and I can't do it the way that it's done in the industry. It's just, like, so exhausting.
Yeah, you said that you enter a fugue state when you're up there on stage, and you can't think about anything. It just goes. It just happens.
Yeah, it just goes. And I, like, people are like, how'd the show go? I'm like, literally no idea. I will listen to the
recording. You're like, I wasn't there. I wasn't out there.
I will know what happened when I listen to it.
I feel like that with a lot of things that I'm very nervous about.
Yeah.
Would you say that you're nervous going up there?
I'm extremely nervous all day.
Leading up to it.
And then once I'm on stage, I'm not nervous unless something starts going wrong, and then I get extremely nervous very quickly.
I've been trying to figure out how to not, because it's a similar theme with all the things that I'm nervous about. Oftentimes, like, driving over here to shoot these interviews, I'm nervous as fuck. Yeah. And then I get down, I sit down, it's fine. Mm-hmm. How do you skip that phase? Like, is there a shortcut to skip that phase?
If you find out, let me know.
Because it always ends up being fine, right? And then you're always nervous, though.
I think, like, the only way I've gotten around it is, like, when I'm on tour, by, the fifth night, it's less scary.
You know what? Today, it was a lot easier driving over here because I had just done a couple interviews yesterday.
Yeah.
But before that, it had been, a 3 or 4 week break. Yeah. And then it's like I entered infancy and I'm like, I'm not capable anymore. I lost it, you know?
Yeah, but also that stuff, it works in your favor, I think, sometimes, because then you're focused on what do I need? What are the areas that I most worry about? How do I address those areas?
Well, I wonder if
that's
there's
how
a way,
I work anyway.
Like, I wonder if there's a way to get there, though, without
I don't know. I think if I wasn't freaked out, I wouldn't rehearse.
So it helps. It's there for
a reason. I'm driving around LA, doing my show in the car. And then my GPS is like, you missed the exit two exits ago, man. What are you doing?
I entered the Fugue State at the wrong time! It's a very vulnerable show.
Yeah. And I think that, absolutely, getting up close to borders and seeing where they are and what they are is interesting. And there's actually a fair amount of comedy that gets up against what is sickness? What is death? That's, to me, especially with young people, and I consider myself sort of just having gotten done with being young.
you just finished this year, last year?
Right around May of last year,
you stopped being young.
Yeah.
Does that make you old, or are you in middle stage?
I don't know. We don't need to figure it out right now.
We don't need to put labels on it.
I think it's safe to say.
Yeah.
I'm not young anymore. Okay. And to think about and talk about illness and serious illness and the stuff that we don't like to think about it.
Especially
but sort
in
of
the
put
West,
it in
yeah.
people's face a little bit.
It's a taboo topic.
Yeah. I would have moments where I'd write a joke and then I would do the joke and people would not laugh because it's too close to the line. But then I could sort of take that, even if they don't laugh, and use it to talk about their own discomfort.
That's
and
true.
That doesn't need to comedy doesn't need to be funny every 15 seconds. There should be seconds where it is. There should be parts where it is.
At least laugh once.
Yeah.
But I do feel like that is something that new comedians might run into is they might feel like you need to make someone laugh. Every 5 seconds, there's a laugh.
I go through and I listen for any period of time where it goes more than 15 seconds without a laugh.
Oh, you replay the
Yeah, and I look recording. At those spots and I decide whether they're worth it or
it's
not.
It's like the audience retention on YouTube.
Yeah. You don't want to lose an audience when they're in the room with you.
Yeah, yeah. That's one thing worse. When they could click away.
Yeah, it's the algorithm not satisfied. I guess I'll make another YouTube video.
Yeah.
If the people in the room aren't satisfied, you're like, I guess thanks for the money.
If they're getting up and leaving, that's an issue. You used this stand-up... almost, it seems as a means to keep a journal.
It's actually where it came from.
To document your journey of going through, finding out that you had cancer, getting chemo, recovering, even down to the moment where you have to tell your wife, you have to tell your mom, you have to tell your child and what their reactions were like. Mm-hmm. And those are such difficult things that I feel like most people would want to forget. They would want to be like, la la la, didn't happen, and in this case, you're documenting.
Yeah, almost if I didn't document it, my brain would decide to forget. It's like, I don't want that. There's a bunch of stuff because when you're on chemo, you're so foggy anyway. Mm-hmm. It's like being hungover forever, but worse. And I was journaling during it, and I was so bad at remembering that a lot of the comedy came from reading those journal, and I was like, that's a good joke that I wrote in the journal to myself that I don't remember writing.
And then you're like, huh, oh, I wrote that? That was me?
Yeah.
You were saying that some things also, in the moment you knew they were funny, but other times it was thinking back on
for
was
sure.
funny.
Yeah. Yeah, it was not funny at all when we were telling my son that I had cancer. There was no...
You found a way to get laughs on stage, though, somehow.
Yeah.
It's obviously a horrible thing. And you found a way to mesh... your struggles and the trauma and even down to suicidal thoughts. Found a way to talk about these real aspects mm-hmm. of going through something like that and make it funny and accessible. I think that's the biggest thing is that it's not just about being funny. It's about being accessible. It's about finding the way to deliver this kind of information in a way that doesn't feel like, ooh, this is a lot. It's it's broken up.
Yeah,
those
for
levels.
Sure. It's really changed... in me and in ways that I part of, in some ways I don't I'm much more anxious now. Mm. And I'm trying to work through that. And it's, yeah, so it's, it's a whole thing that, and I feel like part of that, honestly, is just feeling almost like this is impossible. This isn't a thing that happens to people, but it is. Like, it's like obviously a thing that happens to people. It happens to people all the time. It's just like, it doesn't get discussed enough. And I, to some extent, I think that we still have almost like collective trauma from, and you know, obviously cancers are still very dangerous diseases, but like, it's a lot different than it used to be. Mm-hmm. And like, chemotherapy is a lot different than it used to be. And like, it is obviously awful, but like, symptoms are more easily controlled now. Like, some, and like, people have very different experiences, so you don't know what you're gonna get. We don't have these conversations enough. We don't, like, it just, like, I had people immediately, the moment I had cancer, like, think, oh, he's like, that's a death sentence.
Yeah.
And it's 2024, like that, like sometimes, but not all the time. And like, also a death sentence 5 years from now, is that's a lot of life.
I think it's really important what you're doing, because cancer is something that's so taboo that the information is not being absorbed. It's sure, maybe it's like out there in some sense, but people aren't receiving it.
Mm-hmm.
So in this sense, you're finding a way to say, hey, you can recover from this.
This is a shocking stat that I found as I was doing research about this, is that the cancers that are most likely to result in suicide are the most curable cancers because they are cancers in young people, specifically young men. And young men don't necessarily have, like, they don't have the experience. They're not, or young people generally aren't, like, ready to for, like, a big change in their life. They're like, that's not what I imagined my life was going to be. Like, I don't want that new life. And even though, like, there's a really high chance that in 6 months they're going to be back to normal, they can't imagine having to be the person who's suddenly dependent on a bunch of other people, or who has to have a testicle removed, or like all this stuff that just like all this baggage comes along with it. And they're like, that's not who I want to be. I don't want to be this person who's a weight on other people around me. I was so surprised. I would have assumed that, like, of course the cancers that are most likely to be to result in suicide are going to be the ones that are most devastating and most likely to kill you. But like, it's not the case.
It's the young people who never saw their life going that way. There's a point in your show where you talk about how you wish that you could almost split into two and have one part of you go through all the chemo, go through all the growth, go through everything that would result in basically who you are today.
Uh-huh.
And the other part would just get to go to sleep and wake up and then merge or kill that other version of you.
And be like, I don't need him. It's great. I'm going to learn so much about myself. It's going to be great to do cancer. I would murder that. I would just let him do it and murder him.
And then
take
you would
back
be
my normal, happy life where I'm not scared all the time about my health.
You mentioned that going through this was just such a reminder of your mortality.
Sure.
Do you think that's one of the bigger shifts?
Yeah. Here's the thing. Like, I certainly knew that I was going to die someday. Like, I always knew that. But what I didn't know is how I would respond when that was, like, a more present feeling. That, like, the things I was, like, what I actually was worried about, I was surprised. Mm-hmm. I thought I'd be more worried about my businesses. I thought I'd be more sort of, like FOMO for the future, like not getting to see whatever happens next in astronomy or
see AI kill us.
Yeah.
That'd be great to witness, right?
I thought you were talking about the CIA for a second.
Oh, what I said?
You said CAI kill us.
Oh, CAI.
And I was like, is the CIA?
Did
you mean the CIA? What did we do?
Yeah.
We don't talk about the CIA enough. Mm-hmm. I was worried about what's my family going to do without me? Like, I feel needed in that environment. And if I'm not in that environment, like, they're going to have to figure it out. So I, like, want to make sure that they're, like, to the extent I can support them while I'm here, I should. And then, and the thing I was, like, really messed up about is, like, not getting to see my son grow up.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, like, I even thinking about it. Like, mm-hmm. It was like, that's the best. Like, I'll talk to people who are like have adult kids, and I'm like, that must be awesome. It's just awesome to think, like, this kid, you know, he's 7, and like someday he's gonna be out there in the world, like falling in love and do it, and like, it's just like so mad at his boss about something, like whatever
just
it
the
is.
Mundane.
It's just so good.
Moments as well.
To know that that's like a that that's coming.
And that was one of the harder aspects.
Oh, it's like the thing that I was like, I felt like I needed to think about it.
That's shifted your perspective. And
yeah, because I like all the things I thought I'd be worried about were not really on the list.
Mm. It seems like it pushed you to try some new things like stand-up. Do you think that you would have you would have tried it?
I know. Here's a wild thing. I have no idea when I decided to do stand-up comedy. I was too out of it. Like when I decided, I was like, I'm going to write this down. And then when I like reached out to some comedian friends of mine who are in town with in Missoula, and I was like, do you think I could do this? I have no idea when any of that happened. What I was thinking, it's gone.
It's like you woke was up
in,
one day.
I was in chemo head. Well, I woke up one day and I was like, ah, there's a bunch of videos of me doing stand-up.
So like literally in the moment, do you think it's also the state of trying something so new that makes you so nervous that disconnects you?
Yeah,
dissociates
maybe.
You from it a little bit?
Like, yeah, for sure. And also it's a, you know, I don't know if this is true for everybody, but like when I'm on stage, I don't make memories. There's too much going on.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of the next thing. I'm trying to perform. I'm trying to read the audience. There's so much going on. It's like the whatever part of your brain might be devoted to trying to actually record that data.
Yeah.
Not functioning.
I feel like things would be very different for you right now if you didn't have the outlet.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel really grateful for that. I feel really grateful for having like a wildly large community of people supporting me, and like had no idea what it would be like to sort of tell the world. Be right. Like, okay, well, like I couldn't not say because I was gonna have to take breaks and I was gonna lose my hair. So like it wasn't an option to not be public about it. But then I think it was Greg from Kinda Funny Games. He had the same kind of cancer as me like 10 years ago or so. And I reached out to Greg specifically for that reason. And I was like, I'm just worried that I'm like gonna become the cancer guy. Like I'm gonna be like a cancer influencer now. And I don't wanna like I wanna be like the silly, funny, goofy science guy. And that's what I've been working toward. And like, I love that job and it's people see me that way. And I don't want them to see me as like the guy who got cancer and he's like doing that. And he was like, first of all, buddy, I don't think you have to worry about that. Like, I think that people will see you and like, once you're through this, which you're probably gonna get through it, people don't think about my cancer anymore. Mm. It was just like true. Like no one thinks about his cancer anymore. But like, secondly, it turned out I was like, within a month, I was like, I'm the cancer guy.
You volunteered that.
Yeah. I realized, I was like, wait a second, science is happening to me.
You almost found a way to use it as a driving force, or at least a foundation for being who you've always wanted to be. You've found a way to subtly like give some answers to the misinformation as well, and in some sense be an example of this is how your life could be.
Yeah,
if like this happens to you.
Yeah, it sucks. It sucks, but like, it's life, you know, and like it doesn't end, and like there's fun the whole time. Like even on my worst days, there were chuckles, you know. Like there were things
that's hard
that
though
brought
for
me joy.
I'm sure for many people, but
yeah, for sure.
how do you think you found a way to have that
well
chuckle?
I mean, one, things felt like they were working, you know, it seemed like the chemo was working.
Yeah.
So like that, like I don't want to put myself in other people's shoes, like it's different situations for different people, but from the beginning I could almost immediately tell that the swell, like the areas that my cancer was in, were getting smaller.
Mm.
They're not technically tumors, which I didn't say that, but basically tumors.
Yeah.
I know too many things.
fact check. fact check that, please.
And so, like, there's that it felt like it was kind of going in the right direction. But also, I think it's just like you're a person and you're living a life.
You brought up how you'll get through it, you'll likely get through it, at least, you know, in your case, you'll likely get through it, and life will be different. You can't say if it's worse or better. Life will be different.
It's different. Yeah.
It's different. And there is that, when you're doing something that matters a lot to you, there's this anxiety, there's this nervousness, there's this worry that's attached to it. But with a lot of these things, you know, if it's something fun like stand up, you can experience all those things and it ends up being okay. But there's signals for you to practice, to beware, to pay attention. And a lot can be said about pain and all that as well, but it almost feels like that is a one-to-one metaphor for life in many ways. There are things that you care a lot about, you know, in your situation, obviously you care about being healthy and you're worried the whole time. It ends up, in your case, being okay, if we could skip the step of worrying and find a way to be confident in the outcome.
Well, I mean, I've had therapy now, which I had never done before.
You had never done therapy before?
No. So you probably will be familiar with some things I wasn't familiar with. But
sure.
Just the idea that the anxiety is trying to tell you something. Mm-hmm. You know, it's speaking to something, and you can't be like, shh, go away, I don't want you.
Right.
Which is mostly my strategy.
Right. And you know, it's not this that you're doing, it's this that you're doing. Yeah, it's in there.
I'm not getting rid of
it. It's there.
It's somewhere. Yeah. And instead being like, what are you worried about? And it being like, this. And I'm like, that's important. You're right. Mm-hmm. That's an important thing. And even if you can't do anything about it, just being like, yes. But weirdly, sometimes it's not important. I've had that where it's like, and I'm like, what are you? And it's like this. And I'm like, that's not a thing. That's fake. You made that up. And it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
But that's my former life. now it's like, you know, secondary cancers, relapse. And I'm like, yeah, no, that's real concerns. We have to be worried about that. And like, you know, we can't be focused on that all the time.
It's interesting that you bring that up. It's like, this is a worry. It's there. You mentioned this in your stand-up. You can't control your thoughts.
You can't control your thoughts.
Thoughts just happen. You get to control how you react to it. You get to decide how you react to
it. It's really a stand-up special about how consciousness is an illusion, and so is the self.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't need to tell
people
that.
That's the good tagline. I would watch it because of that, honestly. I'm into that tagline.
Yeah.
You started on YouTube as an educator.
No.
No? What did you start as?
Just a fucking vlogger, man.
Just a fucking vlogger? Just a fucking vlogger. No education there whatsoever. Just fucking talking, just fucking mouth moving, and yeah. God knows what else.
No, I mean, I guess what we started as, and so we were super inspired by Zay Frank and his 2006, The Show. And what was interesting there is, like, he was like, I'm going to make stuff every day, and everything I do is going to be informed by the feedback that I get. And because that cycle is so fast, it's like video, comments, video, comments, video, comments.
It's the first time.
It's so cool.
It seems like such a normal concept now.
Yeah.
And that is also what drove Ian and I in our early stages to do our sketches, where it was that feedback comment loop. Mm-hmm. And it seems so normal now, but that was one of the biggest things that drew me to the platform.
Yeah.
Instant feedback. Mm-hmm. You go and make something else, you've learned something.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't get that privilege with other forms of media that existed at the time.
Yeah, and it also means that, like, you see them as a part of the creation.
Mm.
We're like, that's the thing that's super sparkly for us, is like, what are we doing with these people, not what are we doing for these people?
Mm.
And so the first year we made a video every weekday, we'd trade off days. Mm-hmm. So like, some days it'd be 3 a week, some days it'd be two. And it was like that having to make that much content meant that we were not educators, but we made some educational videos. I mean, we weren't, like, I wasn't a musician, but I was doing some songs. One of John's first videos, he did like sort of a explainer, and he was talking about like the current situation, like political situation in Nepal,
mm-hmm.
while eating toilet paper. And I'm like, because we were like, I don't know what YouTube videos are.
Like, no one's gonna watch a video about Nepal. You got to do something interesting. Let's see. Let's go to the My Strange Addiction page and see what people did there. Okay.
Yeah.
It was between that or eating Ajax. So I'm glad you chose it.
He ate five sheets of toilet paper, okay. And he sort of like went in on what's up in Nepal at the same time.
That's the same video.
We just want views, man.
Anything for views has always been a concept, I guess.
Yeah. We just did whatever was interesting. And when you have to make that many pieces of content,
you end up kind of finding it.
You find things. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we found was the educational videos did well, but they were a lot of work.
But you slowly did evolve into doing more and more of that.
Yeah. So YouTube gave us some money.
Oh, is that how
you remember the original
kind of
programming grant thing that they did, YTOP? We got some money from that. And we were like, well, these videos do really well, but we can't do them with just one person because we're like, you know, you work on it for a week. And if you're trying to do that five times a week, then you have to have 5 weeks to make 1 week of content, and it doesn't work. So we got money so we could hire people to help us do it. Mm-hmm. And that became SciShow and Crash Course. And then from there, our company that makes that is called Complexly.
Mm-hmm.
And Complexly makes a bunch of shows now.
Was Complexly founded because of that?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of those funded projects ended up not going anywhere, but you...
Yeah, most of the ones that were done by YouTubers actually did end up becoming things.
It was the other people that...
There were a lot of Hollywood production companies that got that money and were like, thank you for this money. The moment it runs out, we have other things that we'd like to
do. Yeah, yeah. It was a great program. It set up a lot of things. And I know Crash Course specifically resonated, helped so many people. Like even here on this set, a lot of people here are like, I was there.
So a lot of people work really hard to make those videos.
So that's where you really kind of honed in on education.
Yeah. It seemed like if there was a thing that we were going to focus on, it seemed like, one, we had the ability to, like, we'd found that we were good at it and the audiences liked it, which are both very important. And two, it was good. You know, it was like a positive thing to put into the world.
It's kind of that Venn diagram, like, I like to do it, audience enjoys it, and it is a quality product.
Yeah, and it's not actively destructive to the world.
Right.
Which
yes.
Some YouTubers are like, I don't
need
that.
Yeah, we don't need that. That piece of the pie is just gone. 7 billion Orbeez dumped on this lawn. I don't know. What happens to it?
Nature will find a way to deal with the Orbeez.
Yeah, it'll become part of the Earth again in 7,000.
I don't think Orbeez are actually that bad for the Earth.
Nah, that was just an example. But there's definitely...
Yeah.
There was definitely a phase.
Yeah. There's a lot of kind of prank videos where I was like, oh man, I thought YouTube was good.
Yeah. The content that you guys were making and other YouTubers, I was like, oh, I get it. This is a place where people can learn. And it's interesting how the platform has shifted in a way where, like, my dad is like looking up how to do whatever around the house. And like people that I know who do not consume YouTube as entertainment utilize it as an education platform or for a how-to. And it seems like it's so integrated into every different type of person now. It's super interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, YouTube loves to tout its stats on how many of the video views are educational in some way. And also, like, you can loop a lot into that, you know? Like, you can loop makeup tutorial into that. And like, that's, you know, you're learning.
You can look up all the people that I interviewed that became flat earthers because of YouTube.
Yeah, you're learning something.
I learned something. Changed my life.
A great deal of information.
Yes.
Now,
yes.
Regardless of quality, did enter me.
Right, and that's one of the things that you frequently go back to is fact check. That is almost part of the Hank Green brand.
Yeah, no, I've said some things that I'm going to fact check in this episode.
Already?
Before I...
Okay, are you going to walk off the comeback?
Well, no, I'll make you edit it out if I said something wrong.
Okay, good. So all those weird times where there's hard cuts that don't make any sense, misinformation it's a plague. With every single thing that catches on, every single thing that has something that is so good about it, there is an equal bit of danger / negativity that comes with it.
Yeah, it really pushed me to like look back at previous like huge disruptions in communications technology specifically. So like we think of the most powerful technologies as being like weapons, you know, like nuclear bombs, tanks, even like swords or
like
mounted warriors, like all these things, big. But like by far the most disruptive technologies are in the way that we talk to each other. The thing that we're doing right now, like we vastly underestimate how weird it is. It's like I'm flapping my tongue and like noise is coming out of my mouth and like word, like thoughts are now in your head.
I do not like to think about. And it's just the vibrations in the air.
It's just vibrations in the air.
And they're tickling something in my brain.
Yeah, and as it gets in there,
and I'm converting
like,
it into information. And now it's a memory.
I agree with your vibrations.
Yeah. You know what? You got good vibes. I agree with those vibes.
I think those vibrations are right.
I feel your vibes right now.
Yeah.
They interact well.
I guess it is just, it's all vibes.
It's
all
as the
kids have been saying, it's all vibes.
It's all vibes.
They were right the whole time.
I don't think kids say that anymore, though.
But those kids.
Those kids did say that. There are kids that have
they
said
were
that.
Right.
Yes. The vibes kids. Yeah.
The thing that, like, makes me terrified and gives me hope in this situation is that, like, now we're in the situation where, like, power dynamics are sort of struggling to figure out what to do with the new communications technology. And what tends to happen is, like, things get really messy for a while. I don't know how long a while is. I hope it's faster than it was.
We're in the messy, right?
We're in the messy.
Yeah.
We, like, when we started making YouTube videos, we were not in the messy. We were in this, like, cute little spot. And we were like, this is so much fun. And
that is why it's so nostalgic for me.
Yeah.
Because the internet was just a playground for fun.
Yeah. Just, like, yeah.
Yeah. It's on so the internet? Fun. Yeah, so it's pretty fun.
It's stupid and fun. And we were just having stupid fun together.
I go there when I want to learn and have fun.
And now people are like, the truth
that the government doesn't want you to know.
And it's like, that's what's happening. But then we look back and nobody's like, boy, it's a bad thing that books happened.
That's
true.
You do see the overall, the good outshines in
like
the long
books,
run.
The world is better with books.
Yes.
And I think that the world is better, or at least will be better, with
the
sort of many-to-many communication, whatever it is that we call
it.
It
is tough, though, because there are more, like, there's this crazy, messy period, and then there's an equilibrium.
Yeah.
Right? And there's more things being introduced before the equilibrium has been
found. That's what scares me.
Found with the previous technology.
Yeah, to be in the messy part of the communications revolution of many-to-many communication, and then to add a new revolution of non-human communicators, I'm like, that seems like also a really big deal, and we're not done with the current shock, and now you want to add a new one?
Mm-hmm. Also because laws take a while to catch up to technology, and because technology is exponentially increasing.
Not just laws, but like human behavior and like our response and like like figuring out the sort of norms and taboos. Because I feel like we're starting to get a little bit better.
A little bit. Yeah.
Which is great. Like that's very much different. Like even like getting worse slower is good.
That means that you're reaching an equilibrium
eventually,
a little.
Like, maybe you will go
you're
back
getting
down.
There. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Do you ever feel like your brain is getting in its own way? Like you know what you should do or what's good for you, but you just can't seem to do it. Therapy helps you figure out what's holding you back so you can now work for yourself instead of against yourself. As I'm sure many of you know, I've been a huge advocate of therapy since I started going about 6 years ago. It's helped me in almost every facet of my life, whether dealing with anxiety or depression or just the day-to-day struggles of being human, therapy has been a guiding light for me. So if you've been thinking about starting therapy, BetterHelp might be perfect for you. It's 100% online and it's designed to work around your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire and you'll be matched with a certified and licensed therapist. Plus you can switch therapists at any time for no additional cost. Celebrate the progress you've already made. Give BetterHelp a try. Visit betterhelp.com/padilla today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/padilla. Now back to the world of Hank Green. I mean, you've been doing so many different things, and it's kind of in the zeitgeist now that YouTubers are starting to retire, you know, with news about MatPat and whatnot. And people are like, anyone over the age of 25 probably thinking about retiring.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you are on that path, or do you feel like you were just so creatively excited about so many different things that you wouldn't even be able to necessarily say that you're retiring?
For me, I think that if I said I was retiring, there'd be like people in my community, like in my audience, would have a bunch of separate thoughts that would be like, which thing? And like the biggest, like are we not going to make Vlogbrothers anymore, which we've been doing for 18 years, and there's been a video like at least once a week on that channel for that whole time. You know, that's the biggest question in my head, is like at some point, we will stop, you know, because at some point we will be dead. So like there's a time where we stop. Like there's like we like I know that.
Bro, don't remind me of our mortality at a time like this.
Again.
Well, don't remind me of your mortality at a time like this.
Eventually I will die.
Okay.
And it will be soup and it will be gross. I'll probably.
You'll turn into soup. Yeah, you won't be found for 6 days. 6 weeks.
So like the idea of like stopping that is like that's the most present thought in my mind. Whereas like stepping back from Complexly and like having it go off or like not hosting SciShow for a while, like those are all like jobs I have, but they're not like the thing I do.
You're gonna have to start to pick and choose what you do.
Yeah.
Because
I often don't get to choose what I do, unfortunately.
Or when you do.
Yeah.
Or how long the doo-doo is.
Or how long you do. It's true. It's so hard to control how long you do.
Yeah. Are we making inside references that no one's gonna get?
I think everybody's here. I think they've come along on the path with us.
If they're at the comedy show, they know what if they've seen your show, they know what you're talking about.
But it is an interesting thing about success, is that failure is an end and success is just like a thing that keeps happening until failure happens. So like success isn't like a end state, whereas failure is. So like successes can oftentimes be like, oh, this thing is succeeding. And so now we have to do it until we decide to stop. Mm. And making the decision to stop can be very hard.
So that is almost the, in a weird sense, burden of success. It is the idea that now I have to choose when to stop.
Yeah.
Because it's easy to suddenly have.
Somebody said, I think last night in a conversation with me, they used the word optionality. Like, I have a lot of optionality now, which I've never had before. Now it's like, that's very Silicon Valley of you.
That word doesn't need to exist.
I don't know exactly what that means, but it sounds like the kind of thing that people in Silicon Valley say. Thank you, by the way, choosing with your optionality to do this.
Oh, thank you.
But also with all the other people, because I love the show.
Really?
Yeah.
Thank you.
I learned so much.
It's so hard for me.
I love YouTubers. I love creators.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Well, I appreciate that.
He's also very handsome. It's kind of weird to be in the room with him. Like, you think he's cute in two dimensions?
Hank, don't make us get 3D cameras in here. Those are very expensive. You mentioned to me that you have a way to earn people college credit now.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We started to like look at like what the problems that people who are going into education, like their higher education journeys are facing. And it's like, it's confusing. There's a lot of information that not everybody has access to. And especially people who are maybe first generation students. Like, it's easy to make mistakes that turn out to be expensive mistakes. Mm-hmm. There's also like, you have to choose whether to do it or not. And like, sometimes the sales pitches that colleges or schools will do aren't as honest as maybe they should be. And then there's just like the cost. Like, there's a real cost barrier to education. And so we were looking at like, okay, we're not going to fix this problem. We're not going to revolutionize anything, but like, how do we like incrementally look at this? And so we created with Arizona State University and YouTube, worked together. We were like, let's look at these problems and like incremental solution. Let's just make it easier to get sort of like base, like some early credits that you're going to need for a lot of different majors.
It's like the general education credits?
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. The idea is Study Hall, which is gostudyhall.com. I don't know if that camera is even working.
That's the camera's not on.
Okay.
That was for the intro. Talk to that one there.
Okay.
Say it again right there.
Uh-huh. I thought I maybe had a second angle.
There's no red light there.
So Study Hall, which is at gostudyhall.com.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, you can watch YouTube videos. They're free for anybody. You can watch it at the Study Hall YouTube channel. You can also enter into a cohort. They like start at certain times. So like you sign up and then you're in the group of people that are taking this course. That's $25. And then at the end of that process, if you think you learned it well and you got a good grade in the class that you took and you want to get transferable college credit that you can use at hundreds of universities in the U.S., you can pay for it. And it's like two-thirds of the cost of what you usually pay. It's $400 for the credits.
So give them a little taste test to decide.
Yeah, and it's
a little
like,
sampler.
Yeah, and also like it takes the risk out of sort of dipping your toe in to like going back to school.
That probably is one of the bigger, aside from the cost, of course, that is probably one of the bigger reasons that people don't dive in, because you got to go all in.
A lot of times you do.
Yeah. You've just introduced so many new ways for people to do so many new things and learn so many new things. And, you know, you've done it with educational things. You've done it now with this deep, vulnerable look at you and your experience with cancer. And I just have to say, I think that you're changing so many people's lives in such a positive way. Even if you don't get the chance to sit down and really acknowledge that.
Even if I'm not around to be here. Because of death.
Okay, so that's why you're recording this forever, right? This is why the content that you make lives on the internet digitally forever.
Yeah, yeah, and they'll do the AI thing, and I'll live inside of a computer. Yeah. It won't really be me, but it'll still make videos.
Yeah, we were thinking about having you come out, just do a quick 360 turn, and we say, got it, good to go. We'll fill in the rest.
We got plenty of audio.
Plenty of audio.
You can definitely clone me.
Yeah. The AI will write it, and you'll be good. So, what is next? Do you think that you'll continue? Like, do you have this drive to just continuously provide people with new services that benefit humanity in this way?
I don't know what the feeling of obligation is. Like, I do feel it, though. I feel like, I don't know if it's like the Spider-Man thing, you know, I feel like I have some power. I feel like there's responsibility that comes with that.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I feel that weight really heavily, and I need people in my life to like talk me out of it to some extent.
So like you'll be like too caught up in, I need to do something positive.
And like I have often considered myself to be like a shared resource. Like, it's not mine. It's for And, like, I think that that's healthy to some extent. Like, we all have that. Like, we have people who depend on us. We want to share our, like, we want to support people when they need support.
The only way to support others, though, is if you have that foundation.
Right. And I feel like I do sometimes and I don't sometimes. Like, I think it is a real problem for me where I, like, there have been times in my life where I'm, like, I'm sort of floating around, not at all focused on what's good for me. And so I've been trying to deal with that. But things that really excite me are often things I haven't done before. Mm-hmm. So the comedy is a part of that. I've never written a nonfiction book, and I make a huge amount of nonfiction content, obviously. It's like I mostly make content about like real things and science stuff, and but I've never done that in a long form text format. I'm very interested in that. I'm very interested in, is there a way, now that I've told the Kendra story through a stand-up, is there a way to tell it in maybe a book form where also I get into like some of the science of cancer and cancer treatment? That would hopefully, and also maybe a little bit of like, what can you expect? So like just helpful thing for people who have cancer or who have friends who do.
I think it's interesting that you think of yourself as a shared resource. Let's unpack that.
I really do. It's not that. I think it can be healthy. Like we're not here forever, right? So like we have a moment of being part of humanity, and like what are we gonna do with that moment? And like everybody, like nobody changes the world by themselves. No one doesn't change it at all. And so like what are we doing together?
We're like the ants.
We are like the ants. It is very much, I'm a little bit, like, I think that humanity has, like, an illusion, like that you could easily ascribe consciousness. Like, if you looked at humanity, you might be like, that is a conscious organism, like, made up of lots of individuals.
Mm-hmm. You feel like that was more of a reminder that we are all connected in that way?
And also not just in the moment, but over the span of humanity or the span of life. It's a very weird thing to be a part of. Like, we think we're so normal because, like, we're around us all day. We're so weird.
I mean, besides this and then besides
this. That's part of it.
Yeah.
That's part of, like the weird wet flapping that we do to talk is also definitely weird. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Like, as far as we know, there's no other part of the universe that looks at itself and it's like, that's universe, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And I am not on drugs. This is just cancer.
Yeah, is the cancer what made you start thinking about like?
I mean,
really
I've certainly thought about it, but I hadn't been as in touch with it. You know,
the mortality kind of like
not just the mortality, but like we're just because you and me are only here for a little bit doesn't mean that we're not part of a broader continuum that that's going to be around for a lot longer and has been around for a lot longer than any individual.
Yeah, it's scary. And I think a lot of people do hope that they make a lasting impact. And that's what they're really like their main life goal is. Like, I want to do something that changes the world.
Yeah.
But in a sense, every single person, regardless of what you do or don't do, you are changing the world in some way just because you affect one small piece of the giant puzzle.
And like, what drives it? Because I'm so interested not just in accomplishment, but in fuels. Like, so like, I think accomplishment is great. I think that like achievement, like doing things that like affect and like improve people and the world is like, you know, so cool to be like, that's a human story. It's amazing all the things that we have done so far and that it works. And I feel like it's going to keep working. I think that there's some like self-correction mechanism that keeps it working just like life has that like that whatever we are, I don't like we're different from just life in some way. And
the consciousness aspect.
Yeah. And the dual, like the shared, like you have one and I have one. And like, what is this thing between us?
Although ants, the pheromones in the air, they do the same.
I was just thinking like ants have pheromones and that's how they control each other.
You can almost
like,
see it as a connection in the air, but we have this connection here too, even the vibrations in the air.
We have the vibrations, we've got the love, we've got the like care.
There's unspoken.
There's stuff.
Feeling that we feel
too. There might be some smell too.
I'm sure I can't pick up on it.
But it might be there. What the fuck?
Oh, it's there. No, it's there. We are all connected in some way.
Yeah, for sure. Like, there's something that binds it all together. And I think that the reason why communications technologies are so disruptive is because the thing that connects us is communication in whatever way that we do it. And I think that a lot of the fuel behind wanting to change the world is a fuel that says, I want to be immortal. And that's a lie. That's a lie fuel. Whereas a true fuel is, I want to make the world better for other people.
Is there a sense of peace that comes from the idea that it is not about accomplishing everything and in this one moment with this one life, with this one very short? Is there a sense of peace that comes with realizing that you are part of a much larger
thing? I bet there is. If I did better a job of it.
Yeah.
It's one thing to like be like, I think this is true. I think this is real. I think that I'm definitely an individual, but I'm definitely a part of something that's much bigger and much more important than just me. But like, to the extent that I can actually internalize it, right? Like, I'm like, you know, if cancer came back tomorrow and I would not be at peace. There's so much.
Yeah, I feel like it's easy to say that you're at peace in the right moment.
But. Yeah. I another friend of mine who is a YouTuber who got cancer, I texted him and I said, I just don't feel like I'm done yet. And he was like, nobody feels like they're done, man. And I was like, that's a good reminder. Like, when I die, I'm not going to feel like I'm done.
Right.
Whatever that is.
Yeah, I think there is an idea that like, oh, when I'm this age, I'll feel like I did it.
Yeah.
And I'll be okay.
Yeah.
You know, that's never happening.
Maybe for some people, but like, I feel like it mostly doesn't happen. I feel like people you know, you want to see your grandkids grow up. Mm-hmm. You want to see your great grandkids. You like want to see it. You want to be there. You want to see what the future has and you want to exist, you know? Mm-hmm.
So that brings us to the final question of the day. Why does everything become a crab?
You know, it's just a good thing to be.
It's a good thing to be.
Yeah. I mean,
it's got optimal form, plenty of legs, low to the ground, can move pretty quickly, left, right, don't need to go forward so much.
It's just it's literally just like a good form. And like they're working with similar tools. So like all these things that turned into bugs are all turned into crabs.
They're not bugs. They're not bugs, god damn it.
They're kind of bugs.
They're like as close to a bug as you could get without being a bug.
Yeah. Right? They're like a bug that fucked a fish.
I knew it would happen. I knew the
bug fucking fish would come back.
I knew it would happen.
The moment you brought up crabs.
I knew it would happen.